Welcome to Recalculating America. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America and has been named the best small business book in the Independent Press Awards competition. Each Recalculating program is dedicated to helping small business leaders add profits through efficient growth. During every Recalculating program, experts will give listeners useful information about starting or growing their small business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all whom offer you ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
You know, every week we get emails from people asking how they can better finance their small business. Well, today we have Vernon Tyree. He's president of LeaseQ, and he's here to speak about how LeaseQ could help small businesses find the financing they need. Vernon, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Don. Really a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Tell us a bit about your company and your website so people know where they can go while they're listening to you.
Okay, terrific. LeaseQ is a marketplace for equipment financing. That's both loans and leases. You can find us at LeaseQ, LeaseQ.com. And we also have a finance platform that we provide equipment sellers, that's companies that sell trucks or restaurant equipment or high-tech equipment. There are about 25 different vertical market sectors that we serve. And they have our platform in their facility so they can provide financing, instant financing quotes to their customers who are buying equipment. As a marketplace, Don, I just want to make sure everyone knows that, you know, like you go to Travelocity or Orbitz to get an airplane ticket, and you go to Amazon to buy a book, you would come to LeaseQ's website and fill out an application, takes about 60 seconds. You push the button and you get an instant quote. So we're an equipment financing platform to help companies buy the equipment they need to grow their business.
Well, let's start first with the startups. I've decided that, for instance, I want to open an ice cream store that's not a franchise, but rather just plain ice cream store. Can I go to your site? I don't have any credit history, but can I go to your site to find financing for the freezers, et cetera, that I need?
Yes. So, great question. And startups are a special category of equipment financing. Most of the equipment financing for startups is for dollar amounts under $75,000. What we would do is provide a soft credit pull. We take your application, we run a soft credit pull. It has no impact on your personal credit. We bounce it up against our underwriting engine. The companies that finance restaurant equipment, that's food and beverage equipment, which you would be in that category, and refrigeration equipment, and that also finance startups, would see that you have 0 years in business, and then they would return a quote for equipment financing. Most of, you know, of the small ticket that's under $25,000 equipment for startups is primarily credit-based. They'll look at your FICO score and they'll determine, and your credit history, and they'll determine what kind of financing they're going to provide you. That financing is relatively expensive, nothing that you could compare to the mortgage APR that you have when you buy your house. So it would be something in the 12 to 25% category Startups are considered quite risky, but that financing is available, and there are lots of companies out there that specialize in the financing for your ice cream shop.
Okay, well, I'll turn it around. I've been in business 5 years. I've got my ice cream store, and I've got a chance to go, open another one across town. What happens then?
Well, you'd still be considered by some lenders as a startup, but for other lenders, if you're willing to, you show some experience. That second shop is a big jump, and history says that just because your first shop was a success, it doesn't mean your second shop is going to be a success. So the financing rates will be a bit better, especially if you'll pledge the assets of your first business, okay? But when you move from your second shop to your third shop, that's when the financing rates get much better. And again, you would need to pledge assets from the previous business, but as long as you're willing to pledge those assets, your rates will come down.
But in the first case, and probably the first second store, are you also providing a personal guarantee?
Yes, you are. It would require, especially for a startup, a personal guarantee. There's no business out there that would provide you the money without a personal guarantee. And this is a business. Equipment financing is not a fintech business. That is a startup. You know, equipment financing has been around for 100 years, and there are about 1,000 businesses that specialize in equipment financing. These are both banks and specialty finance companies. They typically specialize in different types of equipment. So the companies that finance restaurant equipment really understand those businesses and understand that equipment, and have a lot of experience. They've been through many economic cycles. So they you know, the companies that are going to be offering you money today have survived the 2008 downturn if they are a true equipment finance company. And I want to point out to your audience that true equipment finance company is a company that specializes in loans and leases for equipment. This is not working capital. This is not what's called merchant cash advance. The rates are much more competitive than those other two options because they use the asset itself, the equipment, as a tangible inhibitor to risk. So so make sure when you're financing that equipment that you're talking to a true equipment finance company.
I'm going to turn it over to Dan now.
Thank you. Good morning, Vernon.
Good morning, Dan.
I want to start off with a broader question. Don, in his scenario, was talking about borrowing the money to buy equipment. In his case, an ice cream store. I want to go to the broader issue by asking the question, why should any small business person, regardless of the nature of their business, if they have to buy some kind of equipment, why should they lease it as opposed to buying it?
Right. So I'm going to break that question down into three parts. One is, why should they finance it versus pay cash? And then why should they lease it versus take out a loan on that equipment? Is that okay?
That's fine. Sure. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. So as you know, a business, to grow a business or to launch a business, you know, everybody needs equipment. So if you're a lawn mowing service, you need a lawnmower. If you're a doctor, you might need an x-ray machine. If you're a chef, you need a stove. So, you know, without equipment, even if it's computer equipment or office equipment, you're not going to be able to launch your business. And so that equipment should generate revenue. And the revenue that you generate from that equipment should service any debt that you take on. So in reality, for every business, and over 80% of the businesses today finance their equipment, the very first loan or financing you should put in place for your business should be around the equipment, because the equipment can service the debt. You want to save your cash for a rainy day. You've got surprises in your business. You have employees that you have to take care of legally. So there are many reasons why you want to preserve cash, and you should not be spending your cash on equipment. So it's typically the very first financing that a business puts in place, and it's the last financing that they forfeit on, because if you don't have your truck and you're a truck driver, you're not going to be getting revenue. So so equipment financing has a very low forfeiture rate. At any rate, that's why you should finance equipment and not pay cash for it. Loans and leases are very different. Loans, of course, if you want to own the equipment at the end of the term, then you want to keep your payments low, you really shouldn't care whether it's a loan or a lease. You should look at the different payment options and take the plan that you like best. There are some tax advantages built into financing using a lease to finance the equipment. Also, a lease, if you're not planning on keeping the equipment at the end of the term, so if it's equipment that wears out quickly, then you can use a lease, which would typically have a balloon payment at the end, and you can decide not to pay that balloon payment, not to purchase that equipment, but let the finance company take that equipment back. It would work exactly like it works today with when you lease a car. You turn that car back into the dealership, and there are there are businesses where the equipment, and for example, in high tech equipment, the equipment is really making dramatic improvements every 3 to 4 years. So you want to buy the latest equipment. We see that in medical and computers, and even in some areas like fitness equipment, commercial fitness equipment, where a gym wants to upgrade that equipment every 3 or 4 years.
So if I take your example, and I'm in the money manager business, then I'm a writer. So my principal tool, my principal piece of equipment that I use is a computer. And
yep.
the computer technology is still continuing to evolve. Can you lease personal computers?
Absolutely. So And you could lease them at LeaseQ. You can come to LeaseQ and fill out an application. It takes 60 seconds and see what your financing options are. And oftentimes, if you go to an equipment store, they'll have equipment financing options available for you.
But it just makes sure I understand what you said. I go in to your site and I want to lease a new computer, and I want to lease an Apple AirBook Pro, and I come to you and I say I want to lease it for 24 months. Is it just like the car at the end of 24 months, I turn in the computer and walk away and get a new one?
For the lenders on our platform, for an individual, that computer probably costs $1,000 to $2,000. There is no,
right.
They're not gonna really provide you what's called a structured lease, where they have a balloon payment at the end. It'll be a dollar out payment.
What does that mean?
The best. A dollar out means that you pay a dollar at the end of the lease and you own the equipment. So.
Are you saying physically a dollar, $1?
Yes. It's called a buck out.
Oh, okay.
A buck out lease, and technically it is a loan. So because the dollar amount for your Apple computer is so low, there's no company that's going to want to do that. But what Apple Computer is starting to do is to provide, just to give you an example, for a large corporation that has thousands of employees, they will actually go and pick up that equipment at the end of the lease, a three-year lease, and provide you replacement equipment. and then they will refurbish that used equipment and resell it. So, so if you're a big company and you have and refreshing your equipment every 3 years is important to you, there are what's called managed finance programs available to you to help you do that.
Well, I have to interrupt you. This is fascinating, Vernon. We're here with Vernon Tyree. He's president of LeaseQ. We just have to stop a moment for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Life, it's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're here with Vernon Tyree. He's president of LeaseQ. It's a fascinating discussion, but can I follow up with Dan's question? If I were a small company with, say, 10 or 15 stations, could I develop a program that you just outlined?
Don, it would be difficult still if the equipment was a $1,000 laptop computer. But if you had stacks of equipment, if you had a full stack computer center, and it cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, yes, you could actually lease that equipment. And it could be new or used equipment, so it doesn't have to be new.
Well, Dan, I just want to go on one step further. In today's cloud world, the idea that companies, like I did when I started out, and I had to buy all sorts of equipment to manage our lists and everything else in the cloud. Is that radically changing how people buy equipment to start a business?
Yes. So we're equipment software and equipment hardware is changing quite a bit. We're financing the equipment that cloud-based companies are putting in their computer centers, but the Uberization of equipment purchasing is happening. So instead of with Uber, you're paying on a per ride basis. You're not going out and buying a car, and that's the same thing that's happening in the cloud. We're buying based on the utility, the compute utility that we require on a daily basis or monthly basis. We're not actually buying the equipment itself. So we're seeing that across a lot of industries where leasing the equipment and buying and selling it on the drip to customers is happening more and more. But we're still financing those businesses that are buying the equipment and selling it on a per-usage basis.
Dan, back to you.
Thank you. Vernon, I want to go back into a discussion about the changes that have taken place in the leasing business, specifically the financing. As I said to you in the pre-show, we had a gentleman on a few weeks ago who was talking about capital and leasing, and he was specifically talking about how in 2008, after the market crash, the big banks like Bank of America and Citibank and all of them got out of the small business lending business, period. And he started a company for loans under $1 million because the big banks didn't want to take a loan less than $1 million because there seemed to be more risk in their mind than loans under $1 million. But he was talking about how alternative lenders have come in this sector of providing loans. And when we were talking before the show, we were talking about the difference between what you do and what, by example, a LendingTree does in the real estate loan business. And I think it was important what you said to help small business understand what's different about your business. So talk about the lending process.
Okay, good. So, yeah, so there are a few things to pull apart there. The first is that equipment financing has been around for 100 years. And since 2008, since the turndown, a number of new kind of finance companies have come into the market. They're generally referred to as fintech companies, and there's a set of those companies called alternative lenders, just as you said, Dan. And so,
Vernon, excuse me for interrupting, but tell the audience what fintech means. They may not be familiar
right.
with the term.
Yeah, fintech is a term. It's really a short. It's a short for financial technology, and these are lenders that leverage financial technology to process their financing options. And there are two primary financing options in alternative lending. One is called working capital, and the other is called merchant cash advance. Working capital is a lender that is going to provide you financing based on your credit. It is not a secured loan, so it's typically an unsecured loan, so you don't require you require a personal guarantee, but nothing beyond that. You don't have to pledge assets, et cetera. The second is merchant cash advance. These are companies that have cash flow, like a retailer. What they'll do is they'll pull you'll take out a loan, and then they will actually pull the money out of your account daily based on the cash that you receive in the business.
Is that like a factor, like what they used to do called factoring years ago?
Yeah, it's an automated form of factoring. Factoring is also available under different scenarios. What most of these companies do is they use your credit card technology to determine how much cash you actually have come into your account daily, and then they ACH that that money out of your account. So these two different forms of financing are typically anywhere from 20% to 300% higher. The rates are 20% to 300% higher than what the rates that you would get from an equipment finance company. So these are brand new types of companies that have only been around for about 10 years, and they use a lot of automation. Equipment financing, on the other hand, is a laggard industry. It's not very automated. It's just now, as an industry, starting to automate, and so equipment financing tends to be, in most cases, a little slow and a little clumsy, but the rates are much better. On your second point regarding what we do versus what LendingTree does, at LendingTree, what you do is you fill out an application, and then they sell that application to four or eight different companies, and then you have four to eight different sales reps calling you, trying to get you to take a mortgage in your case, Dan, or a loan for business financing out. And they keep you in the database because they paid for that lead, and they'll call you for 2 to 4 years. It's a miserable shopping experience if you're a business. And, small businesses, the most precious thing they have is time, and they don't have time to waste on eight different sales reps. So what we do, that's called a reverse auction model, where they auction off that application information to the highest bidders. In a true marketplace like LeaseQ, like our company, you fill out the application and you see what the payment options are, and those finance companies never learn about who you are unless you choose a company and you say, send my application to this company. I want this monthly payment. And then we forward your application in real time to that company, and then we're also on the phone there to help you if you have any challenges. So we give you this white glove treatment to help you walk through the financing process with the finance company that you chose. So that's a very different process.
Vernon, how do you make your money?
We typically, for small, we charge 4% on the face value of a lease for financing under $250,000. So if you take out a loan, if you're looking for a loan or lease for $10,000, then we would charge $400 and you would finance your equipment for $10,400. So on a five-year lease, that equates to about a little under 2% additional cost to the cost of your financing.
But the borrower pays the money, which is
kind of a different model. It's the same if you were buying a house, and you know your realtor. Those realtor fees are rolled into the cost of the financing for the house. So it's a model that's been around for a long time, and the rates typically equate to, you know, very similar to what you get if you go to the store and you use a credit card. So the real difference between what LeaseQ does, there are in the equipment finance space, there are about 1,000 brokers in the marketplace. These are companies that that are brokering that you go to, and they help you get financing. And some of them are quite skilled, but many of them are not. So what LeaseQ is doing is we're displacing, you know, just as Travelocity and Orbitz displaced the travel agent, that all they did was provide the ability to buy an airplane ticket. You know, we're putting brokers out of business. We're disintermediating them if they're not adding a lot of value. Now, if you want to take a safari to Africa, you need a really good travel agent. And if you have really complicated equipment financing needs, you're going to need a really good broker is a good way to invest your money. But for those brokerage companies are charging anywhere from 6 to 15%, not 4%.
Vernon, it's been fascinating. I think Dan will agree, but our time has gotten away from us. Real quick, your website again and how people can reach you?
Yes, so folks can reach LeaseQ at LeaseQ, LeaseQ.com, or they can call us at 888-688-4519.
Vernon, thank you so much for being with us. I know I learned a lot. I hope our audience did as well.
Don, Dan, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
And now, Dan, a word from our sponsor.
Before you hear this or this or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas, and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Dan, our next guest is Steve Murphy. He's president of franchising at Windmark, which has a really interesting combination of products. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
Fine, thank you. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your company, and a website so that our listeners could go and visit?
Sure. My name's Steve Murphy. I'm president of franchising for Windmark Corporation. Windmark is a franchisor of five different brands. People probably know our brands better than they know Windmark, but Played Against Sports, Plato's Closet, Once Upon a Child, Style Encore, and Music Around. All of our brands are in the resale business, meaning we buy inventory from our customers and resell it back to our customers. We've been around doing this since 1988. We've got about 1,200 locations. We do just over $1 billion in retail sales, and we're a publicly held company based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And your website?
www.winmarkcorporation.com, or for folks interested in looking at a franchise opportunity, it's www.winmarkfranchises.com.
So, since I'm not familiar with your business, educate me. When you say you buy merchandise from your customers and sell merchandise to your customers, tell us about what your business actually does.
Well, the business started in 1988 when we bought the franchise rights to Play It Again Sports, but all of our concepts are built on the same premise, and that is that consumers typically either outgrow or get tired of the things that they purchase before the life of that inventory is over. So they look to, you know, typically a Goodwill or some other place to unload these goods. Our stores give an opportunity to bring those goods into our stores. They're still quality items, quality used items that we know have a secondary life that somebody else in the community might be interested in purchasing for a significant discount off of what it would cost them new. And we make an offer to that customer, pay them cash on the spot for the goods, and then we mark those goods back up and resell it to the community at typically 80 to 90% off regular retail prices.
And so you have each of these various organizations or stores you have are all franchisable?
Yes, we're 100% franchised. So we've got 1,199 stores that are open in the U.S. and Canada. Between the five brands, we've got about another 75 that are too open yet, and 100% of those are franchise stores.
And what is your biggest franchise?
Plato's Closet. That's got about 475 units.
And what do they do?
They buy and sell teen clothing, so think Aeropostale, Abercrombie, American Eagle, all of the top brand names that kids are wearing today. They
mm-hmm.
bring that merchandise into our stores. We give them a cash offer for the merchandise, and they decide if they want to sell it to us or not. And then we purchase the things that they would like to sell to us, give them cash on the spot, and turn around and resell it to the community.
So these would be used pieces of clothing?
Yes, we do clothing. In Plato's Closet, we do teen and 20-something clothing, shoes, handbags, jewelry, things like that. Style Encore is geared towards women, so it's kind of taking Plato's Closet, that 20-something-year-old, all the way up to folks in their 70s, and buying and selling the brands that those young women wear. Once Upon a Child is geared towards kids 0 to 12. So, and then Once Upon a Child, we'll do toys, we'll do books, we'll do clothes, we'll do shoes. Play It Again Sports is geared towards sporting goods, mostly hard goods, so things like baseball gloves, bats, hockey skates, things of that nature. And Music Around, we do musical instruments, guitars, amps, basses, percussion.
Really diverse businesses. I have a
yes.
3-year-old grandchild, little girl, and her mom just told me recently she's buying clothes about every 2.5 weeks because she's hit a growth spurt, and it just doesn't. She wonders when it's going to stop. One of the questions I want to ask you, Steve, is there's a huge change taking place in retail. Abercrombie & Fitch is looking to get out of the business. The National Retail Association estimates that by the end of this year, over 8,000 storefronts will be closed in malls and shopping centers and standalone buildings. As the consumer is moving further and further away from big box stores or stores in general and is choosing to do more and more of their shopping online. How's that going to affect your business?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that's a fear that's hyped by the media more than it is in terms of reality. Contraction in retail has historically always been a part of retail. That's exactly what happens in retail. People overexpand, brands get hot and then get cold again, and so you constantly see this growth and then retraction in retail. And I don't think that what you're seeing today is anything more than a typical trend in what we've seen in retail over the years. You know, back in the day, it was when catalogs came out, if you read the media back then, that was going to be the end of retail. I think all of these channels certainly take some of the business, but if you look at where Amazon is in terms of the world of retail, Amazon's about 2.5% of the entire retail world. So it's not a significant piece. So everybody that wants to think that online business is going to kill the in-store business, I think what you see is the omni-channel is really what's being developed. And if you look even at Amazon and some of the bigger players, they're developing retail formats because they know that they've got to acquire and have brick-and-mortar stores in order to fully service that customer base. You can't just do it online. You can't just do it offline. So I think that the idea of retail being dead is probably not exactly the case. There's some retailers out there that are still growing leaps and bounds, and we're one of those retailers. In the resale space actually is one of the shining stars in retail right now. And resale's been up 7%, I think, year over year for the past 10 years, and it's about a $17 billion industry. And they're saying that resale is going to be the growth vehicle in the retail world for quite a few years to come.
So the message that I can construe, or maybe it may not be the right message, but the message I can construe what you said is that the resale side of the business, and these are my words, they may not work with what you're thinking, but my observation, what the consumer has finally figured out is that the things that they bought, and in the past they either handed down to the next generation of children or gave to Salvation Army or Goodwill or the local thrift shop, they realize now that those things are actually assets that have market value that they could sell. And that's creating an opportunity to change the dynamic, because you may have people who walk in to sell you XYZ, and while they're in your store, they take the cash and turn around and buy ABC.
Absolutely. And what we've seen over the 16 years that I've been here is we've kind of had growth year over year for 16 years. And in 2008, when the recession hit, a lot of people think in the resale business that, well, a recession must be the best time to be in business in resale. And actually what we've seen is we've seen growth in years where the economy has been doing fantastic, and we've seen growth in the years where the economy is contracting. And the reason being is because when customers come in our stores, they do exactly what you said. They bring in stuff to sell to us. They might be thinking, well, I'd never think about buying something from a resale store. And then they're in the store, and the stores look beautiful, and they're clean, and they've got a great environment, and the merchandise looks brand new. And they realize that they're a smart consumer, and they realize, hey, I can buy things here and save myself 60, 70, 80% off what I would have spent at retail, and for $50 or $100 get 5 or 6 times the amount of merchandise I would have got at a regular retailer. Now they're a smart consumer, and they tend to then stay on and be a loyal customer with us.
I got to tell you, Steve, when we finish this call, I'm going to send an email to my daughter-in-law and see if there's a store, because I have 4 grandchildren, the oldest being 10 and the youngest being a year and a half. And I hear from them all the time how much they go through clothes. And as much as we've passed them around in the family, this is a place where you could buy quality merchandise, appears to be a place where you can buy quality merchandise. And part of the purchase price can be what you bring in and trade in because they no longer fit. My daughter-in-law told me that she got some clothing that was given as a gift to their daughter. She never was able to wear it because she outgrew it before she could ever get into it. And so she's got brand new merchandise, and now she's got a place with your organization. Do you have on your website, do you have a store locator?
Yes, we do. So you can go find the nearest store to you, and it's exactly what you said. There's people, when they have children especially, these kids grow so fast, you wouldn't believe the amount of merchandise that comes into our stores with tags still on it, never been worn, and the kids outgrew it so fast that they just never got a chance to put it on them. So they come in, and it's literally brand new merchandise that you're now buying at a 70 to 80% discount.
Don?
Oh, I have a lot of questions. I'm just this is one of my easier radio programs. I don't have any grandchildren or anything, and past the age of sporting goods. But let me ask you a question on clothing. Do you clean the clothes before you resell them? That would be a question I was thinking about.
No, we educate our customer to bring in the merchandise cleaned, and we won't buy anything with any rips or tears or stains or odors or anything like that, because we've got to sell and resell the merchandise back to the community. So we always tell people, you know, think about it as a consumer. If you came into the store, you know, you don't want to buy merchandise that's not in great condition. So we want to make sure that the merchandise we buy is in great condition.
Well, you know, people have said that there's been a great re-education over the last 17 years of American consumer. They no longer want to pay full price for anything. Do you think that's true, Steve?
Absolutely. You know, I think in this day and age, you know, everybody in retail seems to be on the new side in a race to the bottom. Everything is promotional. When you see even around the holiday timeframes now, is, you know, everybody moves to promotional so quick to try to unload merchandise. And you see that a lot even in the teen space with the fast fashion. You know, people are just trying to get quality merchandise at as cheap a price as they can. And in our stores, you know, we see that every day. Our customer is the value consumer. Our customer is the folks that are looking to stretch their dollars a little further and want to get more bang for their buck. And you know, fortunately for us in the used business, every day we deliver value to the customer. We don't have to go promotional. We don't have to have sales because our merchandise is on sale every single day.
Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal reported recently that even department stores for the first time were discounting cosmetics, which has never occurred in the prior history. But do you think also that, that we're beginning to in fact, create merchandise that we say sells at $100, but and then expected to sell at a discount $75. Do you think that's a trend as well?
You know, that's always been a trend in certain retailers. That's part of their retail strategy, is to show that value by kind of putting the original price on things. But they you know, consumers know that. I think today, I think they know that that merchandise isn't going to be sold at that. That's just a pricing strategy and a discounting strategy that retailers use. I do think that retailers, and we talked about the contraction in retail, you know, where retailers do have to be careful is, you know, you can't discount your way to the bottom. I mean, at the end of the day, as a retailer, you've got to have healthy enough margins to be able to maintain your business and operate your business at a profit. And unfortunately, on the new side, without very much differentiation, price becomes a differentiator, and that's a dangerous game for any retailer to play. Really, retailers have to get back to delivering the quality and the customer service and all the other things the consumer values as well to get those folks back in the store. In the resale business, our stores operate at a pretty healthy margin, so we're able to still deliver that value the customer is looking for at a healthy enough margin for our franchisees to make a living.
We have to stop briefly here for a commercial, but we'll be right back with Steve Widmark and his fascinating franchising group. But first, a word from our sponsor. We're back here with Steve Murphy. Steve, I have two other questions. Where do you locate your stores? High-income neighborhoods, middle-income, low-income? What's your demographic that you prefer?
You know, our preference is typically to be around where retail locations are, regional malls, outdoor malls. So we're typically located kind of within a one-mile radius of the local malls. And the reason being is because, you know, in those neighborhoods, we get kind of both sides of the equation. While we have the value-oriented customer, you know, we're buying customers from all different demographics and buying merchandise from them, and we're selling to all different demographics as well. So we really want to be in kind of those retail spaces where customers are accustomed to going to purchase their merchandise. And that's also when they see us on the way to the mall or the way back from the mall, they'll know where we are and they'll know, you know, what we do.
Steve, tell us your the various franchisees for our audience.
We have Plato's Closet, which buys and sells teen and 20-something clothing. Style Encore, which buys and sells women's apparel and shoes and accessories. Once Upon a Child, which buys and sells kids' stuff, 0 to 12 years old. Played Again Sports, which buys and sells sporting goods. And Music Ground, which buys and sells musical instruments.
Back to you, Dan.
We're speaking with Steve Murphy, president of franchising at Windmark, and I want to move a little more detail into the franchising concept. We are, as you know, a show for small business and people who are not only in business, but people who are thinking about getting into the small business. So let's talk about the cost of your various franchising models. Are they all about the same price, or do they vary based on the merchandise that they're reselling?
They vary a little bit. The apparel brands, which would be Style Encore, Plato's Closet, and Once Upon a Child, typically range in the startup range of $250,000 to $350,000, and Played Again Sports and Music Around are typically in the $300,000 to $400,000, so a slight differentiation between them. And that includes all of your startup costs, which also includes $40,000 to $50,000 in working capital, as well as your inventory, which, depending on the brand, will be anywhere from $60,000 to $120,000 in inventory.
So you're starting a franchise, a franchisee is starting a franchise, and you're going to sell to them $40,000 to $60,000 worth of merchandise to open their store?
Well, what they're going to do, actually, is our franchisees go through 2 weeks of training, and when they get out of that second week, at that point in time, they've secured their lease. They go through their build-out, and once the build-out is done, they're handed the keys to the building. For the next approximately 6 to 8 weeks, they will be in what we call our open-to-buy period. So we don't sell the merchandise to them. They will actually market to the folks in their community to come down to the store while they're getting their build-out done and they're getting their displays and all put up, and they will buy the merchandise from those customers for a 6 to 8 week period until they've hit the minimum requirements that we have set up for them. And then they'll turn around with a grand opening and actually be able to sell the merchandise back to the customers. And one of the really fun things about that is as you're buying all this merchandise from your customers, they're seeing all the merchandise on your walls, and they're getting really excited themselves at the value and the deals that are in there, but they can't buy anything from you until grand opening. So it builds up this really great buzz in the community and acts as a marketing tool so that when you do have that grand opening, it's not unheard of for us to see 100 to 120 people in line before we open up because they want to get in there and get their hands on that merchandise. Because remember, because it's used, there's not like there's 20 of these in the store. There's going to be probably one. And they want to get in line to get that first before anyone else in the community does. So it really builds up a great marketing buzz and gets people really excited around those grand openings. So we have really, really solid openings on those opening weekends.
Okay. You said you're about 1,200 stores and you got 75 or so in the process of being open. Are you all over the country or are you somewhat concentrated?
We're all over the country and in Canada as well.
And one thing that struck me about your product line, and I'm fascinated to hear how you respond to this. There seems to be one segment of people in your product line that isn't represented: men, and specifically men's clothing.
Yep. Yeah, the challenge, and there's a few out there independents that are in the men's resale business. I will tell you from being a 51-year-old male myself, guys tend to wear their stuff until it falls off their body.
I agree.
So there's it's a very challenging resale market because typically when they come to sell us something, the quality is no longer there.
Right.
We don't have a secondary market to sell that to. Now, that could change, but historically, that's always been the challenge. But, you know, in Plato's Closet, 20% of our business is men. young men, you know, in that teen to 20 something, and young men tend to be a little bit more fashion forward, especially today. They're a little bit more concerned with what they look and how they look, and they are more apt to come in and buy and sell merchandise with us, and it makes up about 20% of that business.
Do you think that the millennials will probably be a better customer? Male millennials will be a better customer as a segment because they may tend to, because of their sense of style, they may basically just turn merchandise as opposed to wearing it till it drops off their bodies.
Yeah, I think young men especially. I think in that Plato's Closet demographic where we've got that teen to 20-something, we do see that. You know, the challenge when they get out and they get into the business world is, you know, there aren't as many suits being worn today as before. But the challenge is that you still don't see that male in that upper 20s and up age demographic really looking to change up their wardrobe enough. Whereas with women, you know, the statistic is 20% of the clothing in a woman's closet has never been worn. And so they tend to go through that merchandise and refresh that merchandise more often. If, you know, the trend as the millennials grow older is if they hold on to that and continue to be a little bit more fashion forward and more conscious of kind of style and what they're wearing, that might end up being an opportunity one day.
I can tell you that my wife could open up an entire store on just handbags.
Well, it's a hot item, I'll tell you that.
She never lets a good handbag go by. I mean, it's just amazing. And
But Steve, do you take in handbags?
Absolutely. Handbags, and especially in Style Encore, but also Plato's Closet, are one of our hottest sellers. So if you can get a Coach bag into a Style Encore, and a lot of our franchisees utilize social media quite a bit, Facebook and Instagram in particular with Style Encore in that demographic, and you put a really beautiful Coach handbag up on Instagram, it's like Pavlov's dog. You know, their consumers respond immediately. They pick up the phone, they call the store, they say, hold on to that handbag, I'm coming in 10 minutes to pick it up. So it is a big part of the business. And, you know, there's value there. Those are very expensive items. So when you can get those items, you know, at significant discounts, there's a lot of folks who won't pay $300 for a Coach bag, but if they can get it at a Style Encore for $40 to $60, they'll line up at the door to get it.
I know I asked my wife when she brings home a new bag, and I say, what did that cost? And she says, never mind.
Well, my wife tells me when she shops a Style Encore what she saved me. So she didn't tell me what she cost. She just says,
right.
Well, honey, I saved this much. So I guess it's a different strategy.
Many times. Back to you, Don.
Well, are your stores individually owned, or do you have master franchisees, or how does it work?
No, they're all individually owned and operated. So we do have multi-unit franchisees, and we have folks that are multi-brand franchisees. But the way that, and our philosophy and the way we like to grow at Windmark is one at a time. We really believe that we need to make sure, and I'm sure you guys see this all the time in your small businesses and dealing with the folks that own small businesses that listen to your program, everyone's got to be successful. Every business has to stand on its own. Every business has to produce a high enough profit that it's giving them the, you know, satisfactory return on investment they're looking for. So we try to be very, very particular with each of our franchisees, and we have an entire process we put them through when they want to add another store. Now, that being said, you know, we've got about 800 franchisees, 1,200 stores, so about 1.5 per. But we have people that own as many as 15 to 20 franchises, and we have a lot of folks that own just one. And it really is dependent on what the individual goals of that franchisee are. If they want to be a single unit operator and it's a lifestyle choice and they want to spend more time with their family, they can do that. If they want to be a multi-unit operator and build up their little empire, as long as they're executing and doing well in each location, they can do that as well. And, you know, for a lot of our owners, they'll own a Once Upon a Child, a Plato's Closet, and a Style Encore. And what we say is they'll be able to kind of take that consumer from cradle to grave because they literally will have that relationship with them all the way through, and we'll see a customer go from Once Upon a Child at 12 years old to suddenly now they're a customer of ours at our Plato's Closet.
So let me, if I could ask just one more question, Don, let me ask you this. In the years that you've been in the business, not everybody succeeds. as much as you would like them to, and as much as you try and help them to succeed. What are some of the reasons why, in the franchising side of the business, people fail?
You know, I think number one is you've got to be involved in the business. There are franchises out there that they don't want the owner-operator or don't require the owner-operator involvement as much. You know, in our world, you need to be involved in the business. We're buying and selling merchandise from our customers. We have cash going across the counter every single day. You need to be involved in this business in order to drive the business. Nobody is ever going to treat your business the same way you will as the owner-operator. So being involved is number one. If you're not involved in that business or you have some success and then you decide you're going to, you know, work 2 days a week, you're not going to be as successful in this business as you can be. The other side of that is just being in retail. You know, retail is just not for everybody, and sometimes our franchisees will get into it and they'll realize that retail is a hard business. It's not a complicated business model, but it is a difficult business because you do have to show up every day and you've got to put a smile on your face and you've got to deal with your staff and the public, and you've got to be ready to handle that each and every day. So, you know, where we see more owner-operators when they don't succeed, it's more likely to be something on the operational side where they have a partnership issue, unfortunately they go through a divorce or something else that disrupts the business. But, you know, we've been fortunate. I've been here 16 years. We have not had many closings, and we've had an awful lot of openings and an awful lot of successful franchisees. But, you know, you've got to be ready for it, and you've got to realize just because you're buying a franchise, it's still a small business, it's still a startup, and you still got to put the work in to be successful.
We're talking with Steve Murphy of Woodmark. I ran them all together earlier. It's been a fascinating time with him, but unfortunately, we're going to have to call it a day. Steve, tell us your websites again.
www.winmarkcorporation.com, www.winmarkfranchises.com, and we do have a recently launched division called Woodmark Franchise Partners. So if you have anybody in the audience that has a great business and they're looking to get it franchised and get it started, we do help and consult and get people started in franchising, and that's through Woodmark Franchise Partners, which is www.woodmarkfranchisepartners.com.
Thank you so much for joining us, Steve, today. It's been a really an eye-opener. Don't you think so, Dan?
Absolutely. Steve, it was a pleasure talking with you and learning more about your business, and good luck, and I'm going to look for your store for my daughter-in-law.
Okay. Well, we welcome any new customer. But, gentlemen, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late-night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
Dan Perkins here from recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Small business funding is easier these days thanks to a new breed of lender called FinTech lenders. These internet-based lenders cut the time between applying for funds and getting the funds to just hours instead of months. They also make it easier to repay your loans, but their costs might be a little higher for their service. The next time you need dollars for your small business, try them. You might like to change. I'm Dan Perkins for recalculating.biz and your small business tip of the day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan, we only have time to say goodbye for today.
Well, it was a great show, and we had some terrific guests, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed it and also got some good ideas of some of the challenges of starting your own small business. So this is Dan Perkins.
And Don Mazzella.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.